They sent her to be refused by the Alpha King. Then he asked for the final waltz. Her grandmother had said it once, on a gray morning when the fire burned low and the wolves of Ashenvale Pack ran without her. The moon does not apologize for lighting what others preferred to leave in darkness. Saren Voss had carried those words like a stone worn smooth from handling, turning them over in her pocket during the years she spent invisible at the edge of every circle, every hunt, every celebration that was never quite for her. Wolfless, unmarked, useful only in the way a table is useful, something to pile burdens upon, something no one thinks to thank. She was 23 years old when the elders of Ashenvale decided she was useful in a different way entirely. They decided she was expendable. Chapter 1. The Offering. The Great Hall of Ashenvale smelled of pine resin and ambition, and neither of those things belonged to Seren. She stood at the back of the gathering while Alpha Doran Vael, broad-shouldered, glossy with authority, made his announcement to the assembled pack. 12 eligible women from allied packs across the Northern Territories had been invited to present themselves at the Conclave of Crowns, a once-in-a-generation ceremony held at Valdenmir Keep, where the Alpha King would take a mate. 11 of those women were chosen carefully, daughters of powerful families, women with strong wolves, impressive bloodlines, political value. The 12th slot, Seren understood without being told directly, was a formality. Alpha Vael called her forward afterward, alone in the hall, with only his two advisors watching. His expression carried that particular blend of condescension she had memorized over years, the tight smile, the eyes that never quite landed on her face. "You understand what this represents." It wasn't a question. "The king reviews every candidate. Protocol demands 12. 11 was an awkward number." Seren held her hands still at her sides. "You need a body to fill the count." "I need a representative who won't embarrass us before we even arrive." He tilted his head, as though granting her something. "You're presentable. You know the old courtesies. Your grandmother taught you well enough. You won't speak out of turn. The king will decline you in the first round, obviously, but the refusal will be gentle. It's done with discretion." One of the advisors actually looked at the floor. "And in return," Seren said, "you'll finally grant me the cottage near the East Meadow. The one my grandmother was promised." The Alpha's smile didn't waver. "If you conduct yourself properly." She thought about the moon not apologizing. She thought about her grandmother's hands, rough and patient, teaching her the old waltz steps on a kitchen floor because beauty lives in knowing, Seren, even when no one is watching. "Then I'll go," she said. She packed one bag. Inside it, beneath a spare dress and her grandmother's worn dancing slippers, soft leather, embroidered with a pattern of moths at the toe, she folded the words away like a second garment, something to wear on the inside. Chapter 2. Valdenmir. The keep rose from the valley like a held breath. Valdenmir was all black stone and silver window glass, built where three rivers met, and the mist didn't fully clear until midday. The 11 chosen women arrived in carriages draped with their pack's colors. Seren arrived in the same carriage, pressed against the window, watching the towers emerge from the fog and feeling something she couldn't immediately name. Later, she would call it recognition. The candidates were housed in the eastern wing. 11 rooms of carved wood and velvet, and one room, Seren's, that was smaller, clearly assigned by some harried steward who had been told 12 without being told which 12 mattered. She didn't mind. The window looked east. She could see the river. The conclave would unfold over 3 days. The first evening, a formal dinner, presentation, and the opening waltz, in which the king danced with each candidate in turn. The second day, private audiences. The third evening, the closing ball, at which the king would offer the final waltz to his chosen mate. 11 women spoke of little else. Seren listened, learning things without being noticed. The king's name was Aldric Vorn, and he had ruled for 7 years without taking a mate, which everyone agreed was unusual, and which the 11 women had various theories about. "He was cold," said one. He was waiting for power to consolidate, said another. He was grieving something, said a third, and that one quieted the room briefly, though no one pressed her on it. That evening, before dinner, Siren sat on the narrow bed in her east-facing room and held her grandmother's slippers in her lap. The moths on the toes looked silver in the last of the daylight. The moon does not apologize, she thought, and put them on. Chapter 3. The Opening Waltz. The great hall of Valdenmir Keep was lit by hundreds of candles set in iron fixtures that branched like winter trees, and the effect was of standing inside a forest that burned without burning. Music rose from the minstrel gallery above, strings and a single low horn, and the 11 chosen women arranged themselves along the hall's edge in gowns that cost more than Siren's entire year of income. Her dress was dark green wool, simply cut. Respectable, not remarkable. She watched the others watch the doors. Alpha King Aldric Vorn entered without fanfare, which surprised her. She had expected more ceremony around a man whose refusal was supposed to be the whole point of her attendance. He was tall in the way that spoke of actual use rather than ornament, shoulders built by something other than display, hands that looked as though they knew how to work. His hair was dark, his jaw set in an expression that she read after a moment, not as coldness, but as careful attention. The eyes were the thing she noted. They moved through the room differently than power usually moved. They paused. They considered. They didn't skim. The presentations began. Each candidate was announced by name and pack. Each was invited to the floor. Siren watched the king waltz with precision and courtesy. He was a good dancer, technically accomplished, but she noticed what the others perhaps didn't, absorbed in their own nerves. He was counting. Moving through an obligation. Something behind his eyes was somewhere else. Her name was announced last. Siren Voss, of Ashenvale. No titles. No bloodline enumerated. The herald said it with the slight flatness of a man reading a footnote. She walked out onto the floor in her grandmother's slippers. The king looked at her. She looked back at him. He took her hand for the waltz. And the music began, and she felt the difference immediately, not in the steps, which were the same, but in the quality of his attention. It sharpened. It arrived. She didn't know why, and she didn't reach for an explanation. She simply danced. Her grandmother had taught her well. The kitchen floor, the hummed melody, the patient corrections. Not stiff in the shoulders, Siren. A waltz is a conversation, not a report. She moved easily, without apology, and because she wasn't performing hope, she was simply present. With 12 steps remaining before the customary end, the king said, low enough for only her to hear, "You're not wearing pack colors." "I don't have any to wear," she answered honestly. "What do you have?" She considered. "Moths on my shoes." His eyes dropped to the slippers for one moment. Something in his face shifted. Not dramatically, not theatrically, but the way a window shifts when someone opens it. An alteration in the air of the room. The music ended. He stepped back, bowed. She curtsied. He moved on. Across the hall, she found Alpha Vael watching her with the narrow look of a man calculating whether something had gone wrong. Nothing had gone wrong. But something had started. Chapter 4. The Audience. The second day brought private audiences. Each candidate was given 20 minutes in the king's receiving room. Siren's appointment was last, and she spent the morning in the keep's library. Not by any strategy, simply because she loved libraries and had learned to find comfort in the one thing no one could take from her, the habit of reading. She was halfway through a history of the old river packs when a voice spoke from the other side of the shelf. "I wondered if you'd be here." She looked through the gap in the books. King Aldric stood on the other side, holding a volume of his own, not yet open. "Were you looking for me?" she asked. "I was looking for the river packs volume," he said. "But yes, also you." He came around the end of the shelf. He wasn't wearing formal clothes, a plain shirt, dark sleeves rolled to the elbows, He looked less like a king and more like a man who had gotten up early and not yet put on his responsibilities. She found she preferred him this way, which was probably inconvenient. "Your Alpha told my Chancellor that you're here to fill account," he said. Not unkindly, directly, yes, she didn't insult either of them by pretending otherwise. "Why did you agree to come?" "A cottage." She told him about the East Meadow, her grandmother's promise, the condition. "And perhaps," she added, "because I wanted to see what a king looked like when he thought no one worth watching was in the room." He was quiet for a moment. "And? What does he look like?" "Human," she said, "in the way that people are when they're tired of performing." He sat down across from her, in the low chair by the window, as though they were two people in a library rather than what they technically were. Outside, the river caught the morning light. "I've been told," he said carefully, "that the women presenting this cycle are all very accomplished. Very suitable." "They are," Saren agreed. "Several of them are remarkable. I've spent 2 days being remarkably bored." She bit back a smile. That's not very kingly to admit. "No," he watched her. "Tell me about the slippers." So, she told him about her grandmother, Marin Voss, who had been an Omega of tremendous dignity and no political use, who had taught herself the old court dances from a book and taught them in turn to Saren on a kitchen floor, who had died before the cottage was granted, and whose promise Ashenvale had quietly failed to honor until it became convenient leverage. She spoke plainly, without performing grief or hardship. It was simply the shape of her life, and she described its shape. When she finished, the king's formal audience time had been exceeded by 40 minutes. Neither of them had noticed. His chancellor appeared at the door with an expression of controlled panic. Saren stood, smoothing her skirt. "I should let you don't apologize for the time," he said. "I'll see you this evening." She walked back to her east-facing room and sat with her grandmother's slippers in her lap again, uncertain whether what moved through her chest was hope, or something more dangerous than hope. Chapter 5. What the 11 knew word traveled fast in the Eastern Wing. By mid-afternoon, 3 of the 11 candidates had heard that the king's audience with the wolfless girl from Ashenvale had run nearly an hour. By evening, the number was generally agreed upon as extraordinary, and the mood in the wing had shifted from competitive to something with sharper edges. Saren was in the corridor, returning from the kitchen with tea she'd gone to find herself because the attendants were all occupied, when Dessa Arun, the most politically significant of the 11, daughter of the Eastern Alpha Council's chair, stepped into her path. Dessa was genuinely beautiful and genuinely intelligent, and she knew it without malice, which made what she said more considered than cruel. "You understand what you're doing?" Dessa's voice was low. "Getting tea," Saren said. "You don't have a wolf. You have no bloodline they'd recognize. You cannot run with him during the moon rites, cannot anchor a territory the way a true Omega can." Whatever happened in that audience, Dessa paused, choosing. "Whatever he found interesting about you today, it won't survive the politics of what comes after." Saren looked at her steadily. "You're probably right." Dessa seemed briefly disarmed by the agreement. "Then I didn't come here hoping to win something," Saren said. "I came because I was sent as a remainder, a fraction to balance someone else's arithmetic. I've been that my whole life. But I'm not going to make myself less than I am to make the arithmetic more comfortable." She stepped to the side, continuing down the corridor. "I genuinely hope you dance beautifully tonight." She meant it. And somehow, from the silence behind her, she thought Dessa might have understood that. Chapter 6. The storm before the closing ball that night. A storm came in off the mountains. It arrived before the closing ball, turning the sky the color of bruised iron and rattling the keep's silver windows in their casements. The ball was delayed by 2 hours, and in that delay, the Eastern Wing grew taut with waiting. Saren sat in the window seat of her small room, watching lightning find the river, and Alpha Vael found her there. He came in without knocking, which was the kind of man he was. "What did you say to him?" The tight smile was absent now. "We talked about books," she said, "and about my grandmother." "You're here to be declined," he said, as though reminding her of a debt. Gracefully, quietly, after which I will have fulfilled the king's requirement for 12 candidates, and you will have your cottage. That is the arrangement. I remember the arrangement. Whatever conversation happened today, he stopped, recalibrated, He has chancellors and council members who advise his selection. They will advise correctly. Your standing here is decorative. Saren looked out at the storm. The lightning touched the water and vanished. Alpha Vael, she said, without moving from the window. My grandmother was promised that cottage for 30 years of service to this pack. She died waiting. You offered it to me as the price of my humiliation. She turned to face him then, and something in her expression made him take a half step back. I've been decorative my whole life. A footnote. An even number. Tonight I'm going to walk into that ball in my grandmother's shoes, and I'm going to be exactly what I am, which is a person who deserves to be there. What the king decides is the king's business, but I will not shrink to fit the space you've assigned me. The storm filled the silence between them. He left. He didn't argue. She thought that might be the most surprising thing that had happened in 3 days. She braided her hair herself, simply, and put on the dark green dress again. She had nothing else. She put on the slippers with the moths. Chapter 7. The final waltz, the closing ball, was everything the first evening's waltz had been, amplified, more candles, more music, the iron branches full of flame, and the great hall dense with dignitaries and pack representatives who had arrived for the announcement. The 11 women were resplendent in a new set of gowns. Saren was in the same dark green dress she'd worn on the first night, and she walked in anyway and took her place, and decided that was enough. The evening moved through its choreography, dancing among the assembled guests, music that shifted from formal to something more like joy as the night deepened. The king moved through the hall with his duty face on, but twice she found him looking at her across the room, and the second time he didn't look away first. Neither did she. The 11 candidates danced with various partners' lords, representatives, one another when the partnering grew informal. Saren danced with an elderly historian from the Northern Territories who told her fascinating things about the River Pact she'd been reading about, and she was genuinely absorbed in this conversation when the music shifted. It shifted to something older. Slower, the particular cadence of the closing waltz. The room quieted. This was the moment. This was what 3 days had been building toward. The king would cross the floor and offer his hand, and whoever received it would become the one the moon rites would consecrate. The king stood at the center of the room. He looked at Dessa Arun. Dessa was composed and radiant and clearly braced. He looked at the others, one by one, with that gaze that paused and considered. And then, Aldric Vorn, Alpha King of the Northern Territories, walked across the full length of the hall past Dessa, past the entire tier of politically valuable, appropriately matched, correctly suited women, and stopped in front of Saren Voss. He held out his hand. The room stopped breathing. She heard Alpha Vael somewhere behind her make a sound that wasn't quite a word. She looked at the king's offered hand. She looked at his face. The duty expression was gone entirely. What was there instead was something simpler and more frightening. It was the face of a man who had stopped performing for long enough to want something real. I should warn you, she said, quiet enough for only him. I don't have a wolf. I have no political bloodline. I will be a complicated choice for your council. I know. His hand stayed extended. I'm asking anyway. Why? His jaw tightened slightly, the way a man's does when he's working out how to say an honest thing. Because you walked into a room where everyone knew you'd been sent to fail, and you wore your grandmother's shoes and spoke the truth, and took up your full space without asking permission. His eyes held hers. I've been king for 7 years. No one has ever done that in front of me. I didn't know I was looking for it until I saw it. Saren thought about the moon and its refusal to apologize. She thought about the kitchen floor, and the patient hands, and the small slippers with their pattern of silver moths. She took his hand. The waltz began. And unlike the opening waltz, which had been an ending, this one was, she understood with each step, a beginning. He danced the way he had in the library, fully present, somewhere else entirely absent. She moved without apology, without performance, and the music held them in its long, slow turning. And the candles in their iron branches threw light across a room full of people who had expected something entirely different and were watching something true instead. When the music ended, he did not step back. "There will be consequences," she said. "Not a retreat, a clear-eyed honesty between equals." "For me," he said, "or for you?" "Both, I expect." "Good," he said, which startled a real laugh from her, and she felt the sound of it strange in her chest, the way an unlocked door sounds strange, the mechanism working, the opening beginning. Across the hall, Alpha Vael stood perfectly still, with the expression of a man watching arithmetic perform the impossible. Chapter 8. Morning After. The formal declaration came at dawn, when the council had gathered and the objections were already queuing. Seren sat in an anteroom off the great hall while Aldric spoke with his advisors, and she did not pace, and she did not rehearse arguments on her own behalf. That was not, she understood, the right battle. The right battle came when he returned and told her, with the directness she had come to understand was simply how he operated, that two counselors had cited her lack of wolf. Two others had cited the political optics, and one had cited both. "And?" she said. "I told them that I had spent 3 days watching 12 women perform their suitability for a throne, and that the one person who had simply been a person, curious, truthful, unashamed of her own shape, was the one I intended to keep." She was quiet for a moment. "Kept like a cottage," she said. "Or kept like someone I intend to learn," he said carefully. "At whatever pace you need, with whatever terms you set." He met her eyes. "I'm aware you came here as an afterthought." "I'm aware the way you were sent was a form of cruelty dressed as practicality. I'm asking if you're willing to stay as something else entirely." She thought of Dessa's assessment, which had been honest, the politics of what comes after. She thought of the council in the other room. She thought of everything that waited beyond this morning. The work, the resistance, the long, slow labor of being somewhere she hadn't been expected. She thought of her grandmother teaching her a waltz in a kitchen, for no audience but the walls. "Even when no one is watching," Marin had said, "because you'll know." "I have conditions," Seren said. "I expected you would." She laid them out, plain and calm. The cottage granted immediately, and in her grandmother's name, not as her own recompense, but as a posthumous honor for a woman who had been owed it for 30 years. A formal accounting of what Ashenvale Pack had promised and failed to provide, not for vengeance, but for record. And time, not a rushed ceremony, but a genuine courtship, conducted with her full participation and consent at every stage. Aldric listened to all three without interruption. "Done," he said. "Done and done." Outside the anteroom window, the storm had cleared completely. The three rivers caught the early light and gave it back in pieces, scattered and bright. Epilogue. 1 year later, the East Meadow in late autumn wore its colors the way the old packs described, amber and copper and the particular rust red of the dying bracken, with the river just visible through the tree line, and the cottage at the meadow's edge, with smoke rising from the chimney, as though it had been doing so for 30 years, which was almost true. The door was painted new. Blue, the color Seren had chosen herself, because she had chosen everything about this place with the same careful hands her grandmother had used on other things. Inside, on the mantelpiece, sat a pair of dancing slippers. Soft leather, embroidered moths at the toe, worn through in the left heel from a night of waltzing in a hall full of candles, and held breath. They would not dance again. The leather had given what it had to give, but they sat in their place of honor above the fire, and anyone who came into the cottage eventually asked about them, and Seren told the story. She was telling it now, cross-legged on the hearthrug, a mug of something warm between her palms, the autumn light coming through the eastward window, to the man who sat beside her in a plain shirt with his sleeves rolled up, listening as though he hadn't heard it before, because listening to Seren was a thing he had discovered he never tired of. They were here for the weekend, away from Valdenmir and the council and the ongoing, patient, sometimes difficult work of being an unexpected queen. The council had come around, most of them. The ones who hadn't were learning to. The moon rites had consecrated them in the spring, and the northern packs had watched and drawn their own conclusions, and what Sarin had found, arriving fully into a life she hadn't been meant to lead, was that truth has a way of wearing down resistance, not violently, but persistently, the way a river shapes stone. She didn't have a wolf. That was simply still true, and it had ceased to be the point. "Your grandmother never stood in this room," Aldric said when she finished. "Not sadly. As an acknowledgement of something that mattered. No." Sarin looked at the slippers above the fire. "But she stood in a kitchen and taught me something that brought me here. I think she'd accept that as near enough." She stood up because the afternoon light was right, and moved to the cleared center of the small room and held out her hand. He looked at it. "There's no music," he said. "My grandmother didn't have any either." He rose, took her hand, and they waltzed on the cottage floor. Unhurried, without audience, knowing exactly what they were doing and why. Because the moon does not apologize for lighting what others preferred to leave in darkness, and Sarin Voss had long since stopped waiting for permission to be seen. The slippers watched from the mantel. The fire kept its steady conversation with the room. Outside, the east meadow held its autumn colors a little longer, as though it too understood that some things, once finally honored, deserve to be kept.